So to respond to the question, what might wisdom feel like? A few times in my life, I think I had what can be called epiphanies, a sudden moment of clarity that led to either life-altering decisions or mental burdens dissolving, as if the puzzle pieces suddenly fell into place all on their own without my doing. Are these experiences insight or wisdom? And I would say that probably yes, those are wisdom working. Although there's wisdom, there can be wisdom about many different things. We could have wisdom about how to drive a car, for example, and there might be a sudden kind of recognition of a good way to drive a car that wouldn't be the kind of insight that we're pointing towards here, the kind of insight that leads to freedom from suffering. That's the direction of these teachings. And so it sounds like from the description of these epiphanies that they were moments that potentially led to an understanding. But again, something like something like an epiphany around, or kind of a recognition, oh, I should do this thing, or scientists might have an epiphany around a particular scientific theory or something like that. And again, that wouldn't be the kind of wisdom that we're aiming towards or that is being strengthened with this particular practice. So it depends in some ways whether these particular experiences were epiphanies or not. They'd probably need to have a little bit more discussion about the particulars. But I think there are some ways to explore and reflect on how wisdom feels in this practice. This is a question that with Sayadaw Utejaniya speaking about wisdom so much, and actually he at one point said to me, he said, you should understand, what does it feel like when wisdom is working? And that led me off to explore for myself, what does it feel like when wisdom is working? And for a while, I had trouble, like, even comprehending the question. And so, just through kind of repeated exploration, kind of like along these lines, it's like, huh, okay, well, wow, it feels like I really understand something here. This must be wisdom at work. That's about all I could do, is just kind of recognize it in that way. And so that exploration did lead me to recognize wisdom working in a variety of ways, and so I just like to explore some of that with you and encourage you to do your own exploration of this, because it is valuable, and this is probably not an exhaustive list of ways that wisdom works. So, when describing this factor of wisdom, it is an activity of mind, and so it has a function, it has a job. And so another way into this question is to explore, what's the job description of wisdom? How does it function in our minds? How does it feel? Sometimes, it can, I think, have different feelings at different times. And different functions, too, because, the whole way the practice even gets going is because wisdom is at work in our system. I mean, we talked about the different levels of wisdom, Sutta-maya Panya, the wisdom of hearing and or reading from the teachings, and then that kind of filtering in through our system where we reflect on it ourselves. How does this make sense? Does this make sense? Is there a kind of a inspiration to act on this aspect of Chintamayapanya, the wisdom of reflection, and then the wisdom of understanding, of insight, Bhavanamayapanya. And I think at each of these levels, the wisdom feels a little bit different. And even within these levels, I think there's different ways that wisdom manifests. It has a big job, wisdom. So it's got a lot. It's got a lot to see and explore. And so even just from the beginning of our practice, the whole way that we encourage the doing of mindfulness practice. Early on in the retreat, I encouraged a kind of perspective of being aware to just be curious about experience as experience. Just be curious about what is actually happening in this moment. And that is bringing some wisdom in to the mindfulness. It is joining the perspective of wisdom to simply recognize an experience as experience with the awareness. And so this is how the practice even begins, how it even aims in the direction of the understanding of how our minds create suffering. And that's really the whole framing of wisdom in the Buddhist teachings, is what is suffering and what is the end of suffering? At one point the Buddha said, that is what I teach, suffering and the end of suffering. And so the wisdom that the Buddha offers is really around that that topic of suffering. What is suffering? How is it created in the mind? And how can it be released? Knowing experience as experience is one way towards the understanding of what suffering is. When we recognize, oh, this is anger, as opposed to I'm angry and I need to do these things out of this anger. When we just notice, oh, this is anger, then we begin to recognize the quality of anger as it arises in our system is suffering. It hurts. We feel the constriction of it. And so that is wisdom at work, actually. Seeing the suffering of the arising of an unwholesome state of mind, the recognition that that is suffering is a form of wisdom. And so one of the first kinds of wisdoms we experience. And it's a crucial difference, the recognition of the suffering that arises with an unwholesome mind state versus the mind buying into that unwholesome mind state. There's a vast difference there. And the wisdom that the mind gathers that this is suffering begins to lead us in the direction of letting go. It gives the mind an education. It helps the mind to understand this is not helpful. So that's probably one of the key experiences. It's kind of like that kind of wisdom. We might feel a little bit of a shift around something, a difficulty. The sense of recognizing, oh, this is what's arising. We might feel a shift from being caught by that arising to the recognition, oh, it's just this that's arising. Again, that shift, I think we know the helpfulness of that shift. And again, that's wisdom at work. We're not responsible for that shift, although the conditions of cultivating the mindfulness from this perspective creates the possibility for these shifts of wisdom to grow. So I just like to offer just a few ways that wisdom might be experienced. And then just see if there's a conversation that follows from this. So we've talked about various explorations, seeing causes and conditions. Sometimes we might see the causes and conditions unfolding in our experience. Again, not trying to figure it out, but actually see an unfolding. Several of you have described this in the conversations, the Dharma discussions that we've been having, seeing how a sight leads to a perception, leads to a thought, leads to a reaction. And the watching of the unfolding of that and seeing that as conditions unfolding, not as me doing this, not as me making this choice to think this thought, but that it's just the conditions unfolding. That's wisdom that allows us to see those conditions and have that understanding. We might also, in that seeing of that unfolding, see where the mind gets hooked, where it gets caught in the suffering, where it kind of leans in the direction of suffering and perhaps lets go or reorients around that. So for myself, seeing the arising of kind of the unfolding, I think I told this story about seeing a thought leading to the intention for anger. So kind of clearly seeing the conditioned nature of what I was doing, cutting an apple in my kitchen, and then seeing a thought connected with the person that I was angry with that was related to that event. I mean, that the memory was being with that person at a fruit stand, and so I could see the link between what I was doing in the memory. And then the memory kind of conditioned the direction of the mind wanting to get angry. But seeing that unfolding, seeing those conditions unfold, the mind just seeing that it was heading to suffering, let the whole thing go. And so again, and that's wisdom. That was clearly wisdom at work. It was so clear that was not something I did, that let that wisdom, that wasn't like I said, oh, I can put that down. It was the seeing that way lies suffering. The wisdom simply released that direction. The mind let go of that. And that, I think, too, is a way that sometimes wisdom works. The kind of that experience of understanding that way lies suffering. In that example, came because I had spent several months feeling what it feels like to be angry, feeling the suffering of anger. And so that wisdom was developing kind of slowly over time, in a way. It was developing each time I was aware that there was anger and that it was painful, that it hurt to be angry. There's a little bit of wisdom developing, like, yes, this state is suffering. And so that happening over time is like, I talked in the reflection last night, that some of you heard, some of you were there for, about the gradual way that the path unfolds. In that case, this was a kind of a gradual accumulation of the wisdom. It's like, yep, wisdom. I mean, the anger, yep, it hurts, yep. Oh, comes up again, yep, still hurts. Arises again, yep, still hurts. So it's like just each time the mind kind of just getting the picture. Yes, anger is suffering. And then the time when the mind saw the intention towards anger, saw the wanting to get angry, because it had experienced and knew directly, the wisdom had been accumulating, anger is suffering, over the months, that when it saw the arising of the direction towards anger, it let it go. It knew, that wisdom knew, yes, that way lies suffering. And so that wisdom allowed the mind to let go of that intention, to not follow through on that intention. Let's see, more. Another way that I've seen or kind of wisdom that I've experienced is the kind of recognition, and this is, you know, teachers say this a lot, you know, thoughts, a thought about the past is a thought that's arising in the present moment. It's not actually the past. It is simply a present moment arising. The seeing of that, the actual recognition that when there is a thought about the past arising, that it's not actually recreating the past, it is simply a present moment arising. And that our suffering also is a present moment arising. So we might be remembering something that happened in the past around which there was some kind of suffering. And as that thought comes up, then it kind of almost feels like, initially, at least certainly it felt for me initially, like when that memory came up, that the suffering was inherent in the memory, that all of those emotions, they were all inherent in the memory. But then over time, beginning to see the thought can arise, well, kind of like this story I just told, the thought can arise without all of the emotional baggage. The thought can arise and then the baggage kind of gets constructed in the moment. So not only is the thought a present moment arising, but any suffering or any reactivity to that thought is also a present moment arising. We can see this, we can recognize the constructed nature in the moment of the suffering that's happening now. And that's very powerful when we see that, because we see it's kind of like, it's not like there's this reservoir of suffering that's just like we drop into. It's actually generated. And so again, we can see that. We can see that the suffering, you know, a thought arises in the moment, a sight, a sound, a smell arises in the moment, a thought arises in the moment in relationship to that. The thoughts and emotions arise in the moment. It's all constructed in the moment. Suffering arises in the moment. Independence on conditions in the present moment, supported by conditions from the past. But those conditions from the past are not sufficient to have the suffering be arising in the present moment. We need to jump on the bandwagon of that in order for suffering to arise in the present moment. The mind has to jump on the bandwagon of that. The habits and patterns have to jump on the bandwagon of that in order for suffering to arise in the present moment. And again, seeing that suffering is constructed in the present moment, there's a lovely kind of freedom that we can experience with that, to see, oh, I'm not tied to this. This is not inevitable that this suffering comes up, because the mind is doing it right in the present moment. Sometimes wisdom, and we've talked about this difference, you know, sometimes wisdom kind of can create the conditions for it to feel like there's a bigger container in which something is held. You know, there's a reactive pattern of some kind happening, and the mind can recognize, oh yeah, that's what's happening. And the pattern itself keeps happening, but there's an ease, and that ease, you know, that I mentioned that one earlier, oh, this is just, that's a form of wisdom, the sense that there can be okayness with the arising of something challenging. And that's, you know, that's wise attitude at work there, that's wisdom at work, that can be okay with this difficulty arising, and that creates the conditions to be able to see the suffering nature, the impermanent nature, the self, the not self nature of that experience. But sometimes the wisdom can be strong enough, and this is more where maybe it feels like epiphany, you know. Many of these descriptions of wisdom that I'm talking about don't have that quality so much of feeling like a real aha moment. You know, so often I think we do kind of preference or think those aha moments are the important ones, but the gradual kind of development of wisdom is actually most of what happens in our practice. This really grain by grain wearing away of the ways in which we're clinging, this moment by moment, the cultivation of just recognizing, oh yeah, that's suffering. Anger arising is suffering. It's just this gentle wearing away or accumulation of the wisdom. This is suffering. This is the way towards the end of suffering. So much of the way wisdom works and that we can recognize at times is just being this very gradual kind of cultivation and development. But sometimes it does come with more of a sense of like a clear seeing, like this question, you know, the puzzle pieces fall into place and it's just like a letting go. In a way, that was the way it felt when the mind let go of the anger, or let go of the intention to anger, because the anger didn't even come up in that situation. It had a feeling of an aha moment. It was like, wow, I would have expected anger to arise here, and it didn't arise. So sometimes wisdom can arise in a moment, and it can be a kind of a strong wisdom that meets the moment, and the suffering just falls apart. And so it doesn't feel like, oh yes, there's a bigger container where the anger is being held. It's like as soon as that anger is seen, we experience the release from it. We feel the letting go. It's just like, phew, it just vanishes. Sometimes that is the way wisdom works. And then there's another kind of wisdom that has been, we've touched into it a little bit with in some of the groups, and maybe even in this bigger group, noticing when a reactivity or an unskillful pattern is not arising. The non-arising of defilement, the non-arising of reactivity, or the absence of reactivity, that can sometimes be in relationship to concentration, you know, that the hindrances are at bay because the mind is really settled into concentration. But sometimes this absence of defilements can also be the work of wisdom. In the Satipatthana Sutta, in reference to the hindrances, there's an encouragement that we notice the non-arising of the hindrance. So noticing the absence, noticing when it's not there. And likewise, in the third foundation, there's an encouragement with respect to the root defilements, greed, aversion, delusion, to recognize their presence and recognize their absence. You know, when they're there, when they're not there. And the recognizing when they're not there begins to point our minds to what it feels like to not have this reactivity operating. So sometimes the non-arising of defilement, the absence of defilement, of reactivity, can be wisdom at work. And there's a couple different ways that I've seen it happening in my own experience, how this non-arising happens. You know, one is maybe the most obvious is that I've seen through learning that a particular, activity would tend to be habitual, would lead me in the direction of suffering. An example might be that having conversations about politics with particular people tend to lead to reactivity. And so, that recognition of that there could be an avoiding of that circumstance, just not going there, just don't go there with that topic, with those people. So there's a way that that's some wisdom to recognize this being at this moment is not perhaps able to hold the kind of conflict that arises around that topic with these people, and so just not going there. So that's maybe more in the realm of a reflective kind of wisdom than the more of the Chintamayapanya than the Bhavanamayapanya. Another way that's a little bit more perhaps reflective of actual wisdom that's working in the present moment, but again, comes through reflection, comes through recognition more than a feeling in a way. But, and some of you have talked about this, it's like, oh, these things that would typically have created a kind of a reactivity, they don't have that power right now. They're not doing that, So I'm, finding that the mind is more balanced, more equanimous. So the feeling of balance and equanimity, and the recognition of that as being, there's not the habitual reactivity arising. So we're recognizing the absence of habitual kinds of reactivity. And that can be wisdom at work. I think one of the most direct ways of seeing the non-arising of a reactivity is in the kind of story that I told earlier around the anger, where in that situation there was a very clear intention in the mind in the direction of anger. And the seeing of that intention, the knowledge that it led to suffering, the mind recognizing that way lies suffering and let go of the intention, that was a very clear seeing in the moment. That anger did not arise very directly in the moment. It wasn't just like, oh yeah, I see that's like, not arising. It's not happening right now. It was a seeing that there was the movement towards it, and that movement towards it let go. That was clearly wisdom at work. That kind of, so when we see an intention in the direction of dukkha, in the direction of reactivity, and the mind, there can be a wisdom that arises that recognizes that way lies suffering and lets it go. That too has the feeling of a kind of an aha. You know, that for me was a startle. It was like, wow, it's possible to be thinking about this person and not be angry? It was really kind of shocking. And then the other, another way that we can recognize the non-arising of defilements is when we see wise attitude in the mind, when we see the mind balanced, when it has the qualities of compassion, of equanimity, the Brahmaviharas are present in the mind. And we can know in that case that the mind is absent the hindrances, absent the defilements. So there's many ways that we experience wisdom. And I'd encourage a curiosity about it. Not just in the obvious ways. Not just in the way it feels like a big aha moment, but to appreciate the little moments, the gentle, gradual accumulation of wisdom that happens. One more piece. The wisdom that frees us, I'd say the wisdom that really moves the mind towards release from dukkha, is the wisdom in relationship to impermanent, unreliable, not self. The wisdom that corrects those misperceptions, taking what is impermanent to be permanent, taking what is unreliable to be reliable, taking what is not self to be self. That's the wisdom that deeply frees the mind. So we would call that Vipassana insight. There's a lot of insight that happens in our practice that may be in the realm of psychological insight. And by psychological insight, I would say that is kind of understanding a little bit about our personal patterns, how our personal patterns were created, seeing into our personal conditioning, seeing, for instance, in my own experience, the pattern of anger as from my upbringing, and kind of seeing the psychological connections there. You know, seeing the connection between that time on the playground when I was teased to this moment. You know, the psychological, the story level connections that we make, the narrative kind of connections that we make can provide there's some psychological understanding that happens. And so, you know, for myself around the pattern of self-hatred, for instance, I began to recognize the ways in which relationships from my past had contributed to that, and there were some deep understandings about that, and some deep personal psychological understandings connected with the pattern of self-hatred. And yet it was surprising to me, even with those what seemed like very deep insights, that they didn't really touch the pattern. You know, the pattern, the self-hatred kept arising just as strongly. But the there was a benefit I saw. It was a little bit of a surprise that after having some of these psychological insights and understanding, you know, almost from the you know, what might be looked at as a therapeutic perspective of understanding how this pattern happened in my own life. So understanding some of the conditioned nature of the pattern, for instance, that it didn't, like, release me from the pattern. But what it did do, having that psychological understanding, was did connect to the impersonality. It connected to a little bit of the understanding of the not-self nature of the pattern. And so there was some Dharma insight in that psychological understanding. Understanding the conditioned nature of it is a Dharma insight. Understanding the particular narrative is the psychological insight. But understanding that it is conditioned, that's a Dharma insight. That's a Dharma understanding. And that Dharma understanding helped the mind to hold it as less about me. No, this is when self-hatred arose. You know, when self-hatred arose, it's like it feels like it's about me. It feels like it's very personal. But the psychological understanding that was connected with the understanding of the conditioning supported the mind to hold it, taking it less personally, so it could be witnessed. It could be just seen as, oh, this is a pattern. So from that standpoint, it created the conditions where there was the container that could hold the self-hatred as it arose without feeling so pulled into the rabbit hole of it, without feeling so drowned by the pattern. So there was a little bit of wisdom that could hold the seeing of that pattern arising. And then that capacity allowed a different level of understanding to happen around the self-hatred, to see it was just an arising. It was a phenomena being created in the present moment, being believed in the present moment, by a process in the mind in the present moment. That seeing had a kind of a deeper cutting into the suffering of that pattern, a much stronger release. So the Dharma insight into the constructed nature of that self-hatred was very freeing. And so I just wanted to kind of mention that there's some of the insights may have more of a psychological flavor, and they have their value. They definitely have their value, but they can be, and they can have that kind of aha moment feeling too. You know, it can feel like I understand. And yet that understanding isn't quite the psychological understanding isn't quite the kind of understanding that will really let the mind release the pattern, release the suffering.